back in 1971, a Mr. and Mrs. Farmer of Margate travelled to Wales for their summer holidays. At the start of the week, they joined a British Rail mystery tour. It went to Margate. Mr. Farmer explained that for months they'd been looking forward to getting away. It was all a bit of a disappointment. Mind you, in 1976, some prisoners in Mexico had an even bigger disappointment. In November 1975, they'd started digging a secret tunnel designed to bring them up on the other side of the prison wall. On the 18th of April, 1976, their tunnel came up in a nearby courtroom. The surprised judges, who were actually sitting at the time they appeared, just sent all 75 of them straight back to prison again. One of the almost inescapable features of life is that it does sometimes bring disappointments. The author Seamus Heaney wrote, "I think childhood is, generally speaking, a preparation for disappointment." While Kurt Vonnegut wrote, "Maturity is a bitter disappointment for which no remedy exists." Well, that was cheerful, wasn't it? You're beginning to wish you'd stayed at home this morning. But it actually brings us to the next in our series of new songs, old songs. As you'll know, if you've been here over the past few weeks, on these Sunday mornings, we've been thinking about some of the songs which have kind of provided the soundtrack for a lot of people's lives. Songs which have been around and which kind of seep into our thinking and often shape the way that we think. But as well as listening to those, we've actually been turning to those great ancient songs, the Psalms. Because it seems to me that so many modern songs can kind of pose a question, but you need to go back to the Psalms to find some sort of answer. And our new song this morning, well, this does kind of stretch things a little bit and probably shows that I am now aging beyond what I would like to admit. Our new song this morning is 20 years old. It's 20 years ago that Radiohead released their third album, OK Computer, and that contained the song No Surprises. I think generally, I don't think there's anybody who would accuse Radiohead of writing happy songs. I think that often, when bands achieve a kind of lasting popularity and songs endure for a long time, it isn't just because they've got nice tunes or something like that, but because the words of the songs say something that many people can relate to. They kind of resonate with many people's experience. A couple of weeks ago, we saw that with the way Ed Sheeran's Castle on the Hill just taps into that feeling of nostalgia that so many people have. And maybe Radiohead's enduring popularity, and they headlined Glastonbury this year, they actually played that song, is that for many people, older people and also younger people, they do feel the lyrics do speak for them. A heart that's full up like a landfill. A job that slowly kills you. Bruises that won't heal. You look so tired, unhappy. Bring down the government. They don't speak for us. It's a song full of disappointment in life. And even though later on it talks about having a pretty house and a pretty garden, they don't actually alter the situation. They don't fill that void. Life is just made up of no alarms and no surprises. Nothing different. Nothing changes. Just disappointment. Now, maybe this morning you're sitting there thinking, phew, dearie me, what's he on? Maybe you can't relate to that at all. But many people will be able to, because life can be disappointing. I think that sometimes that can be just as much an issue for Christians as it is for non-Christians. In actual fact, I think it can be a bigger issue for Christians, because at times our disappointment in life spills over into being disappointed with God. It is something that you find in the Bible. We thought earlier about that kind of situation from Isaiah 40. You can think of other ones. There's Jonah. God sent Jonah to preach in Nineveh, but when the Ninevites responded, Jonah wasn't happy. Lord, take away my life, for it's better for me to die than to live. Or Jeremiah. called by God to be a prophet. He was constantly rejected by God's people. Why did God put him through that? So the word of the Lord has brought me insult and reproach all day long. But if I say I will not mention his word or speak his name, his word is in my heart like a fire shut up in my bones. I'm weary of holding it in. Indeed, I cannot. Deep disappointment. Isaiah, Jonah, Jeremiah, and maybe most notably of all, a guy called Asaph, the writer of Psalm 73. Linda and Ollie are going to come and read it for us now.
Today's reading is taken from Psalm 73, and it can be found on page 586 of the Pew Bibles. Surely God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet has almost slipped. I had nearly lost my foothold, for I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They are free from common human burdens. They are not plagued by human ills. Therefore, pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. From their callous hearts comes iniquity. Their evil imaginations have no limits. They scoff and speak with malice. With arrogance, they threaten oppression. Their mouths lay claim to heaven, and their tongues take possession of the earth. Therefore, their people turn to them and drink up waters in abundance. They say, "How would God know? Does the Most High know anything?" This is what the wicked are like, always free of care. They go on amassing wealth. Surely in vain I have kept my heart pure and have washed my hands in innocence. All day long I have been afflicted, and every morning brings new punishment.
If I had spoken out like that, I would have betrayed your children. When I tried to understand all this, it troubled me deeply. Till I entered the sanctuary of God, did I understand their final destiny. Surely you place them on slippy ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly are they destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. They are like a dream when one awakes. When you arise, Lord, you despise them as fantasies. My heart was grieved and my spirit embittered. I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. Yet I am always with you. You hold me by the right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterwards you take me into your glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? Earth and has nothing I desire beside you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but my God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Those who are far from you will perish. You destroy all those who are unfaithful to you. But as for me, it is good to be near my God. I made the sovereign my Lord, my refuge. I will tell all of your deeds. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you. Great job. Surely, God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. It's got to be right, hasn't it? God's bound to be good to his people, isn't he? Especially when his people are pure in heart, people who love and trust and obey him. Asaph knew that's how it's got to be. And of course, we've got even more reason to believe that. After all, Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him." So what happens when God seems not to deliver on that? What happens when it actually seems as though those who reject the Lord and go their own way, do their own thing, when they seem to be the ones for whom everything's working out fine. The sort of people Asaph knew. For I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They're free from common human burdens. They're not plagued by human ills. It's the sort of thing we see today. When people who want nothing to do with God seem to really have a perfectly happy life. And for Asaph, it was just too much. Surely in vain have I kept my heart pure and have washed my hands in innocence. What's the point in being a Christian if your non-Christian neighbors and colleagues seem to get all the breaks? Asaph was a disappointed man. That doesn't necessarily mean that his life was full of tragedy. Of course, tragedy brings huge disappointment. And as a church, having lost Nick, we just know about the pain and the disappointment of something like that. But I actually think that when Asaph says, all day long I've been afflicted and every morning brings new punishments, he doesn't necessarily mean that literally. It could just be that the constant pain of disappointment, because his life's not working out how he expected it to. It's just not working out how he dreamed it would. A heart that's full up like a landfill. A job that slowly kills you. Bruises that won't heal. Just as in that Radiohead video, life just seems to be drowning you. Draining the life out of you. Disappointment can be an overwhelming emotion. So what do you do when life has left you feeling disappointed? What do you do when your dreams have crumbled, when even God hasn't blessed you in the way you expected? What do you do when you are in Asaph's position? I think one of the things we've discovered from these songs we've been listening to and thinking about over the past few weeks is that contemporary songs can be very good at asking the question, but not at giving the answer. Think of Castle on the Hill, the Ed Sheeran song. You might look back at the past, you might be sort of full of nostalgia, if only you could go back to how things were in the good old days. But you can't. There's no way back. Or Somewhere Over the Rainbow. We have these dreams. But as one writer said, the floor of dreams is eggshell thin. And no surprises. Life might have left you feeling bitterly disappointed. But what can you do? When I tried to understand all this, it troubled me deeply, till I entered the sanctuary of God. The only antidote to disappointment in life is to be able to look at the bigger picture. I've just read a book by a guy called Paul Tripp, a book called Awe. And there's an expression which he uses. He uses it a few times through the book. It's a very good book. If you're looking for something to read, I'd recommend it. There's an expression that he uses. And that expression is that many of us, even as Christians, have become awe amnesiacs. We have awe amnesia. We have forgotten the wonder, the glory, the majesty of God. Oh, certainly we can sing about it. We've been doing that this morning. But in reality, something else has taken the place of awe of God in our hearts and minds. We were created for awe. Worship is actually hardwired into us. It's part of what it means to be human. But there are two things that Tripp says in his book that I think are very important. First, where you look for awe, will shape the direction of your life. And second, misplaced awe keeps us perennially dissatisfied. In other words, if you are allowing anything else to take the place of God in your life, that will actually shape how you live your life, and it will leave you dissatisfied. And so he says, and I guess that if all of us who are Christians, in our heart of hearts, we know this, nothing in the entire physical created world can give rest, peace, identity, meaning, purpose, or lasting contentment to your awe-craving heart. Looking to stuff to satisfy this desire we have inside is just futile. But I think the problem is that even though I guess most of us here would say, yeah, we know that, we all too easily allow desire for something else to replace desire for God in our lives. We might still love God, but actually what matters to us is the wonderful stuff God gives to us. Yes, we're grateful to him, but it's the stuff rather than God which we crave. We look to God to give us what we think we need. Good job, comfortable home, happy family, healing when we're ill. And if God doesn't deliver on those things, we become disappointed. And when that happens, when life is not working out as you think it should, when you're dogged by disappointment, it is easy to feel that it's God who's let you down and to feel disappointed with him. To feel like Asaph. Why doesn't God work for our good? Because we kind of bring this subconscious expectation to the situation. Romans 8:28 says, we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. But if you're reading Romans 8:28, never, ever stop there. Who've been called according to his purposes. For those God foreknew, he also be predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. In other words, the good that God is always working for his children is that he is going to make us more like Jesus until we go home to be with him. That is the ultimate good, and it is a good that God will never allow to slip. In all things, God will be working for that good purpose. But along the way, we may face all sorts of human disappointments. Things we've dreamed about come crashing down around our feet. People we've relied on prove to be unreliable. Yeah, those disappointments are real. But even through those, God may not be working for our apparent good, but he is working for our ultimate good. And that finally is what Asaph realized. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. When I looked at my situation with purely human eyes, when I allowed that to cast me down into disappointment with God, I was being just like anyone else who doesn't actually believe in the Lord. But then, he lifted up his eyes. Yet I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterwards, you will take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My heart and my flesh may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. You see, the only antidote to the sort of disappointment that Radiohead sang about is being able to say to the Lord, and earth has nothing I desire besides you. And that does not mean that we're supposed to reject all the good things God gives us and become hermits living in a cave or something like that. Writing to Timothy, Paul said, God gives, richly provides us with all things for our enjoyment. God gives us so much to enjoy. But if any of the good things God gives us, the wonders of creation, or our work, or music and art, or family and friendship, or health and comfort, or fruitful ministry even, if any of those things become the object of our desire, they will let us down. But if our desire is for God, if we live in awe of His glory, if the things of earth grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace, then we will not finally be disappointed. You see, basically, when it comes to disappointment, there are only two ways to live. There is the way of no surprises, a heart that's full up like a landfill, a job that slowly kills you, bruises that won't heal, no alarms and no surprises. Just the disappointment that comes from knowing that no matter what you have, something is missing and that nothing's going to change that. Or there's the way of Psalm 73. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. And this morning, as you leave church, you will leave either with a no surprises mindset or with a Psalm 73 mindset. And the big question is, which? Where does this leave you?